You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Everybody get up, it's time to slam now.
Oh, yes, it is the first time in the history of the slam dunk that he's jumped over a guy off the backboard between the legs. Young fella, that is an 11. And I'm going to say it like that. It's over. It's over, ladies and gentlemen.
One hand, Shut it down.
That is
look, he's taking off his shoes.
Yeah.
He's like, it's over.
The winner of the 2020 AT&T Slam Dunk from the Miami Heat, Derrick Jones Jr.
Is it a goal you have to win a dunk contest before you retire from a dunk contest?
Nah, it's a wrap, bro. It's a wrap. I feel like I should have two trophies. You know what I mean? It's over for that.
It's Hub Arkish and Anthony Herron on 670 The Score.
That's what you got for the next 3 hours. Anthony Herron, Hub Arkish here on 670 The Score. Starting off on a Sunday morning, we'll take you all the way up until Sunday afternoon at noontime here on The Score. And you heard the voice there of Reggie Miller, Kenny Smith, and Kevin Harlan. Probably a little D-Wade mixed in there too, the folks last night on TNT. During NBA All-Star Saturday night, and there was a stretch where, you know, it felt like maybe no one cared about All-Star Saturday night. We weren't sure if the dunk contest, as Hub raises his hand, you know, it had lost some of its luster. And it's probably, I think, because the stars of the game, you know, the best players in the game, don't necessarily do the dunk contest anymore. I think that's certainly loses some of the majesty that it used to have, where it was like, you know, the guys who were playing on Sunday were also participating in the dunk contest on Saturday. That's not the case anymore. But what I've been astounded by over the past decade, because I felt like there was kind of a limit to what the human body could do. It's like, all right, maybe we've just seen every dunk that's possible. And now, beyond just saying, okay, we'll jump over some cheerleaders or whatever, we'll throw a blindfold on. Now it's legitimately, like, I don't know, it's going to get to the point where you see a guy do a backflip in midair and dunk the basketball, because we are seeing now, whether it was Vince Carter at a certain point, then there was a plateau. Now what we saw from Zach LaVine a few seasons ago, Aaron Gordon multiple times in the dunk contest, we are seeing what the human body in a continually enhanced manner every few years or so, that we're seeing more and more dunks that are just more and more astounding. So I was riveted by what I saw last night, just as a guy just in the infancy of what the Jordan era was when I was a kid in the 80s, and just, you know, kind of soaking it all in at being back in Chicago. I loved every second of it. I did, even though Aaron Gordon ended up getting robbed for what some folks feel like was a second time of a dunk contest championship. And Z-Pac was telling us when we came in, he apparently had a very angry caller about it, which I wouldn't necessarily say I got upset about it, but it did feel like a night where it was unfortunate a guy who dunked as well as him didn't win.
You know, I think that's why we make a good team, because I couldn't care less. I'm sure that'll anger some people and whatever. What am I going to do about it? I think part of it, though, and I don't want to date myself, but it's impossible not to at this point, because I am who I am. When the dunk contest started, what was so cool about it was it was the minority of players in the league who were even dunking.
Oh,
I mean, okay, you know, yeah. when a Dominique came along, when a Michael came, actually Dr. J first,
right,
and then they followed him. I mean, but believe it or not, people, there was a time in the NBA, and it wasn't centuries ago. I mean, you know, it was actually the 90s, you know,
right?
Where a lot of guys on the floor weren't even dunking, you know. And so then you'd see these guys do these, you know, not as, but these acrobatic things. And it was more just about height. You know, yeah. in the beginning, how high over the rim could you get? Could you get your elbow in the rim? You know, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And but now, you know, it doesn't make it any less impressive. but everybody on the court
everybody
can do
duck.
It.
Yeah.
And so now it's almost more like a Hollywood show than really an athletic thing. And so, and it would be nice if they would pick judges who could add and subtract, because apparently that's the problem. So, I mean, Kevin and I were talking as Z-Pac was leaving, and he's, I don't know why people get so upset. Isn't there a financial component to it? I would assume there's a cash
There always
award.
Has been, yeah.
There's a trophy and there's money involved. And,
right.
And so at least do the math right, you know. I mean, a tie is a tie, so call it. What would be so horrible if you had two, you know, slam dunk champions? But you know, for those who enjoy it, I hope they enjoyed it last night.
And last night it did end up being quite the show between, you know, Derrick Jones Jr. of the Heat and Aaron Gordon of the Magic. From a slam dunk perspective, the Chicago element in All Star Saturday night was Zach LaVine, of course, who participated in the three-point shootout. LaVine ended up getting 23. And what overall, you know, 23, a lot of years would at least advance you to the second round, but it didn't last night. So LaVine didn't make it to round two with a 23. Joe Harris didn't make it to round two with a 22. So those are scores that certainly aren't bad scores by three-point perspective. They're no Craig Hodges, which the scoring is so different right now. I did think it was cool that they've added a couple of 30-footers, like the deep wing area to the three-point challenge. You still have the five stations off the rack surrounding the three-point line just beyond it. But then now you also have these couple of 30-foot shots that are worth 3 points. So every rack has the money ball at the end of it, and then you can pick which spot has all five as money ball. So the scoring is now beyond what it was back when I referenced, you know, Craig Hodges, who hit his first 19 shots that one year. I think it was like in the early 90s at some point. When he was just winning three-point contests, it seems like, every season. So the scoring is different now, but I do like that they've added the two shots there from 30 feet, because that's become such a big part of the game in the NBA at this point, where you see guys taking these really deep three balls. So a guy like Trae Young, who, you know, didn't even advance to round two, that's a big part of his game. And obviously Steph Curry has just revamped the way that folks have to defend in the NBA because of how deep he shoots, and now you see so many other guys doing that as well. The three-point contest, kind of cool, especially because Buddy Hield ended up winning on the very last shot of the contest to overtake whoever it was he was meeting with in the final round. He had like 25, and then the leader had 26. And I think it was Devin Booker who, you know, had 26 at that point. Hield had to hit his last shot, his money ball, he hit it. And so he ended up winning. So that was a cool way to end the three-point contest. But the dunk show was one of the better, just looking at the pure dunking that was going on, the height, the explosiveness, the lack of missing from the two guys who met in the final round. I think that was a cool part of it, too, because it got to a point where guys were missing a lot of dunks, and that kind of slowed things down for a few years. But it was a cool show, and the dunks themselves were really, really impressive. So I guess I'm now at another point in my life where I'm wondering, you know what? What else can the human body do right now? I don't know what else is going to be possible with some of these dunks, but they continue to get creative. Well, might have been nice if Zach LaVine was out there, but I get the point that he made. He was asked about it on multiple shows throughout the week as he was kind of making the media rounds. And I saw, as I've been out around town a little bit over the last couple of days, I ran across some of Zach LaVine's representatives at one point in a hotel the other day. Like, yeah, I mean, you know, he obviously likes to dunk, but just, you know, physically, and Zach LaVine has said this publicly, just physically, he's had knee surgeries, and, you know, there's just only so much leaping around, you know, that makes sense for him to do in the midst of a season where he carries such a big load for the Bulls, and that's his focus, is more so just making sure he is physically ready, physically capable of doing everything he needs to do to close out the season. Would have been cool to see him and Aaron Gordon meet up again in the dunk contest, but that was not the case. It was still a really good show, though.
So the part I may have misunderstood, though, he declined or he was not chosen?
He declined.
Okay, yeah, I didn't realize that. I thought he was not chosen, which I thought was a big mistake.
Specifically in the slam dunk contest, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. I know right. He was in the three. But, I mean, if he declined, then fine. I got no issue with it.
Yeah.
But I couldn't believe, I mean, Chicago is important to the NBA, even though we're having our issues right now, you know, as far as the Bulls go. But it's a huge part. And to bring the game back here for the first time since 1988 and to have the Bulls so underrepresented and to have a particular element of the weekend where, you know, he would have been a star. But if he declined, then fine. That I have no issue with. And if you've won it a couple times, I guess that makes sense. I was surprised that he was invited to the 3-point, because I know he's, I think, 10th in the league this year at like 38-point-something, but not exactly known as a 3-point shooter, you know. And you know, you mentioned Craig Hodges. I mean, it's not, I agree, it's not as athletic. It's probably not as creative. It's certainly not as creative. It's not as entertaining to watch. But I actually like the three-point more only because I'm so impressed by it and because it is an element of winning games. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is an important talent in the NBA as opposed to there's probably guys out there who could win dunk contests who could never play in the league, you know. And so, right. but this is all just a matter of personal taste, you know. And as long as the crowd enjoyed it, you know, and I think that's what matters. And obviously they did. I'm always curious with this stuff. We'll find out in the next 12 hours if you're really worried about it, or in the next day or two, what the TV ratings are for it. Because there are just things in sports these days that I will never understand. Like why they play the Pro Bowl in the NFL. And the answer is because of the remarkable number of people who watch it on TV.
Right,
now, yeah. I would expect I think that this would be at least more entertaining to basketball fans than the Pro Bowl would be to football fans. But I'll bet you the TV ratings don't approach what the Pro Bowl was, just because that's the way the NFL works.
Right, so, yeah, I mean...
No, I just can tell everybody this hour on The Score is brought to them by Fisher Roasted Ovens. Never fried snack nuts, never fried, nothing to hide. And, I'm curious to see what kind of ratings they get tonight. You know,
right.
Sunday night, I don't know. Do ratings really matter as much anymore? Only because I know you get paid on ratings. And I know you could charge for your ads based on ratings. But considering that apparently, I shouldn't say nobody's watching. I don't know if more people or less people are watching, but all the best programming is now not on network TV anymore. I don't think I don't think there are ratings to attach to something that is streamed or something that's on Netflix or Hulu or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I know how my industry, the print media industry, has changed so radically in recent years. I don't know how all that works television-wise.
You're a TV and radio star, too. I mean, I know you're an old-school print guy, but your face is everywhere. Your voice is all
over
the place.
I'd say star is a bit of a stretch.
You're a multimedia mogul at this point, huh? I mean, you're going to short sell what you're out there doing. Yes, but yes, your career born from the print, understandably so. But I think the ratings, because live sports has been kind of the main thing that's been able to withstand the shorter attention span of the public out there, has been able to withstand, you know, all these other programs, whether it's been, you know, like The Walking Dead was the number one, you know, scripted show for a number of years there. And it didn't even come close to the ratings of a Sunday Night Football, which became the number one show of any sort in television for so many years. And, you know, the NBA's or the NFL's Pro Bowl will outrate, you know, most NBA and pretty much all NHL games anyway, even though it's an exhibition where no one's really playing defense and those types of things, because football is that juggernaut. So that's why football gets more money than anyone else. But I think even with the kind of dissipation of attention spans and all the additional content that's there, is why folks throw so much money at the major sports, you know, because the ratings are, the eyeballs are what they are. And then you see so many folks. Like, I'm surprised that there hasn't been more where ESPN will do the college football, the national championship game, and really the basketball Final Four, and especially the basketball championship games, they'll do in a similar fashion where they do that mega cast. I'm surprised that professional sports haven't gone in that direction yet. I'm sure there's a reason why. I haven't asked anyone about that in particular, but you think where you got multiple platforms available, the linear, the digital, the broadcast, the cable, and everything else, ESPN kind of throws their national championship programming on a bunch of different channels and computers and all that stuff. I'd be surprised if at some point the professional leagues don't go in that direction too.
Well, yeah, I'm sure a lot of it is just about they've figured out how to pull the most nickels out of it, if you will.
Yeah, right.
I mean, they are streaming now, and you know, I'm guessing that these network contracts are so huge that I'm guessing they have some restrictions in them as to where else you can put it, because the only way they can get their money out of it is they put enough eyeballs on it to sell the ads for astronomical amounts. So.
He is Hub Arcus. I am Anthony Heron. Here till noon with you on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Good lineup of guests on the way for you today as well. Sean Anderson is on the other side of the glass with us. So as we approach the bottom of this hour, we'll be able to talk to Bruce Levine, talk some baseball with him. We'll also have Sam Smith coming up later in the show as well. And also Justin Termini of NBA Radio will join us later on in the show. So some cool guests on the way. Plenty of discussion to be had. If you would like to participate in that discussion, you can do so by calling 312-644-6767. That is 312-644-6767. He is on Twitter at @Hub_Arkish. I am on Twitter at @BigAntHeron. You can hit up the channel itself at 670 The Score on the Twitter sphere as well. We'll take a timeout. come back here, get into some more basketball. I got some baseball on the way we definitely want to get into also with some of the Chris Bryant things from the podium that he had to say the other day as both teams are out in Cactus League play out in Arizona. So lots to get into, and whatever you want to participate in, you can do that by the phone line or the text line at 67011. So a short timeout. We'll be right back here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Young threw it away, intercepted by Brown and laid in by Wagner, and that's going to do it. 126-114, and the Bulls commit yet another turnover. Peyton advances right forecourt. This ball game is over as the Bulls go into the All-Star break with a six-game losing streak and fall to 19-36 on the season, 8-20 on the road.
That's where we are at the All-Star break here in Chicago with the Bulls. We were discussing a bit of All-Star Saturday night before we went to that first break, as Sam Smith is on the line with us right now, writer at Bulls.com, writer for Chicago Tribune for a number of years. If you enjoy basketball, especially here in Chicago, you have certainly heard him, read his work over the years. Hub Arkish and Anthony Heron here on 670 The Score. Let's go out to the Alpamonte Ford Hotline and welcome in the man himself, Sam Smith. Sam, how you doing this morning? Hey, Sam, how you doing this morning?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks.
Yeah. thanks for
issues. You know, I have a lot of same trouble in the morning, on the weekends.
Yeah, I hear you on that. The All-Star weekend so far, let's start there as opposed to spending our entire time talking Bulls with you, which can be a bit of a downer at this point. But I've actually, you know, it was 88 the last time it was here, and as I've played football in other cities, I actually haven't ever crossed paths with a city where the NBA All-Star weekend was going on at that time. So it's my first opportunity. So I've gotten out around town a little bit and attended a couple of things with All-Star weekend going on here. How has the event changed since the last time I was here in Chicago in 88, when it felt like a big deal back then? How different is it now this time in the city?
Well, back then they all used one hotel, a Hyatt Regency. And I think now they're using 26. And so it's expanded somewhat. Yeah, it's really become the NBA used to have a lot of annual events, league meetings, and all, with everyone gather. And then this be sort of become it's more sort of evolved and morphed into like a annual trade show with their sponsors and TV partners and the media. And then, you know, the events sort of become kind of a sidebar. But they've realized that the last couple of years that it gotten bad. I think they're trying a couple of things tomorrow, today's afternoon with the game a little bit. Having gone to like 35 of these or something, you know, I'm probably not the best one to be enthusiastic about it at the time. But I think overall, you know, it's sort of a nice addition for each city. Not that Chicago is, you know, quaint like some of the places they've had it, you know, Charlotte last year and Indianapolis next year and Cleveland after that for the 75th anniversary. You know, they do the all-time 50 best players. They'll do the top, you know, 75. They'll add 25 to that. in a couple of years in Cleveland. So it makes a little bigger footprint in some of those places compared to Chicago. But the NBA, what they do a good job of is going around the city. They have a lot of events in a lot of different places, and they kind of drag their players on. I give the players credit because they really do run them around to a lot of clinics, a lot of interesting, community activities, good activities. So I think they really bring, a nice presence to every city that they're in. And the players do get out and, mingle and, they get out in the community activity. So it's kind of a fun thing.
Sam, I'm sure that the selection to the All-Star teams will always be the honor that it's been. You want to be recognized as one of the best at what you do. But beyond actually being selected with all the extra events they've added and it probably, as you just pointed out, I mean, they're working here this weekend when everybody else is off. Is the participation, is it your sense that the players, want to be a part of this as much as they did back in the day when it was just, let's pick a couple teams and go out and play a game?
Yeah, I think they do. I think that's reflected in Zach LaVine with the Bulls. And not because I'm Chicago and I'm around him all the time and see more of his games than anyone else. But he really was a deserving player this year. He played, and it's sort of an interesting dynamic that evolved. I don't know how they do it exactly in football. And I'm sure they don't do it the same because they basically don't put anybody on a team with a losing record on the All-Star team, which I think is wrong. I value team success, but that's for the playoffs. That's not for this. This is sort of an individual accomplishment and an entertainment event, essentially. And if you're one of the best performers, it used to not be that way. I remember Mitch Richmond played with Sacramento. I don't remember them ever winning 30 games. I think he was on 6 or 7 All-Star games in a row. So sort of evolved into, but the players, put it this way, if LeBron James or Kawhi Leonard or one of those players was overlooked, I think they'd be angry about it, even though they get run around and they get asked to do a lot, and they do a lot, and it is a little tiring. But what the league did, to the credit, is it used to be you'd play the All-Star game Sunday, and then Tuesday would be your first game. And they've made a lot of accommodations for players in this era, many more than they used to. And so they won't start again until Thursday. And most of the teams finish their games Tuesday or Wednesday. I think the Bulls finished on Tuesday. So basically have a week off in the middle of the season. And I think, I think the honor is really welcome. And I think that certainly the better players, despite they having to put out a little more. But if I tell you what, they get treated really well. I mean, don't get near an NBA player at this. You'll have 4 security guards wrestling you to the ground if you get within 20 feet. it really treated special and treating like royalty. The president is not any safer than any of those players.
Sam Smith, our guest here on 670. The Score, just kind of chatting a bit about All-Star Weekend here. And it's hard for me, just, for folks in general, especially where Derrick Rose is here, has been here in the city this weekend and doing, signing autographs and being around town a bit. And to just look at things through the prism, when we think about where the Bulls are at as a franchise, it had me wondering about the Derrick Rose injury and just in the overall kind of landscape of Chicago sports. Is there another injury beyond like Derrick Rose, Gale Sayers? Are there other Chicago sports injuries that really rival those two for how they've shaped franchises and just what the next decade or decades could have been for Chicago sports in general?
Well, Gale Sayers is always the one we point to. Of course, I remember when he was at his best, the Bears were hub with no better. It seemed like the Bears were losing all the time. Anyway, not that it was his fault, but of course that's a bigger team sport. But I doubt there was anything rivaled Rose in the sense of and probably Sayers would have or could have been in that level. But I really think Rose would have become one of the great players in the history of the game, really. for the way he played. Now, because of the way he played with that explosiveness and everything, maybe it was inevitable that he couldn't, you know, like you see in Williamson now, and most of us were hoping, but we don't believe that that's his style of play with that size body, with that explosion, putting pressure on his joints and whatever. I'm not a doctor at this point, but it's hard to see how he can endure a long career, and sort of hope he does. And maybe it was the same with Derek, but you know, his ability to explode in the air like he did with that kind of quickness and power was almost really unprecedented. I'd seen enough basketball to know I'd never seen that before. And then, you know, it was obviously validated by winning the youngest ever MVP and winning it when LeBron James was in his prime. So, I mean, this, I don't know that we can measure. I don't know that we've had individual athletes potentially of that talent level. I don't recall any, you know, we haven't had a storied baseball history that one person's injury probably, possibly I'm overlooking, but the Rose thing, not just the Bulls, you know, what I think basketball really, and it's great the way Derek's come back and, you know, been really a productive player and, you know, marginal, really on the edge of being an all-star, sixth man of the year candidate. I mean, it's been a great career recovery. Bernard King had something like that in basketball after an ACL a couple of years out. And it's, you know, that's really rare or encouraging to come back at such a high level. But it's a loss for basketball to the, what the, you know, player level. He could have been in the excitement he played with. And then, and you see, even now, you know, the fan response to him is extraordinary still, even though he got to receive quite a bit of criticism at times by the media, the public, you know, the nationally, and especially kids still, you know, when he was having some issues here and there was some negative publicity overseas and there was questions, well, so Adidas is going to drop his contract. He was still, I think, their most popular endorser in Asia. He's always been popular around the world, which is sort of mystifying in some sense. But I think there's a identification with him, with the joy he played with and sort of simplicity as an individual. So, yeah, it was a terrible, you know, circumstance that day, you know, in the United Center. I was just a few feet away, and everybody knew at the time, you know, what it really meant.
Sam, you know, I realize that he's had some ups and downs, even in addition to the injury with his career, but looking at how he's reinvented himself now, and I understand that the Bulls hope that Coby White is the future, but he's not a true point guard, and Rose was available kind of on the clearance rack, if you will. Did the Bulls make a mistake, you know, based on how he's reinvented himself, on not bringing him back, not only to you know, make the fans happy, but possibly even as a pretty good piece as a senior citizen to teach some of these kids?
Yeah, I certainly would have. I think, you know, it was a tough judgment at the time. I mean, it seemed like at the time, what they were doing last summer made sense. You know, Satoransky, the point, you know, was more sort of a pure point guard and, you know, went on to have a great summer, you know, sort of with, you know, basically outplayed the USA basketball players, the Olympic US guys we sent. And it, you know, it seemed like sort of a, you know, younger, healthier veteran, you know, probably, I think, because of everything the franchise went through with the injuries, I think they just were afraid of bringing Derek back and going through that again. And, you know, can he play? Can he not play? And but yeah, I think in retrospect, it would have been great for the franchise and especially for the fan base to bring him back. You know, hindsight is easy, but what if, you know, at the time, you know, he could only play 40 games or 50 games, you know, what would the community reaction have been? And so I think they were, in a combination, worried about that because of everything they endured. And if you remember, the fan base wasn't that happy about what was going on during his injury. Now, I think there was a lot of media misinforming and emotional reaction and disappointment about what the team was and what it had become. So, you know, at the time it wasn't a great parting. And then, you know, when he had a couple of incidents with New York and then Cleveland, the notion was, well, yeah, we did the right thing. And, you know, it was time to move on and all that stuff. So, you know, I think really he surprised more, but yes, and of course the Bulls didn't expect all these guys to get hurt and end up, you know, 16, 17 games under 500 and the community, you know, upset with the team at this point. Derek would have been able to paper over a lot of that because, you know, hey, let's at least go see Derek Rose play. So it was in that sense a lost opportunity, although I don't think last summer, you know, there was a lot of, gee, how could we have not picked Rose and, you know, picked this guy? I think the couple of moves they did, Satoransky and Thad Young particularly, were viewed favorably. You know, but when they don't move out, when they don't work out, people don't remember them as favorably.
Sam, as always, outstanding stuff. Looking forward to continuing to read your thoughts on the remainder of All-Star Weekend with the game coming up here later tonight. So appreciate you joining us today.
All right, guys. Good to talk to you.
Take care, Sam.
That is Sam Smith on Twitter, at Sam Smith Hoops. Thoughts on NBA All-Star Weekend, Derrick Rose, and, you know, a little bit about the Bulls as well. We'll have more basketball talk coming up later in the show. Before break, I wanted to let you know the bottom of the hour has been brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Chicago Wolves host the Cleveland Monsters at 3 p.m. today. It's a Little Debbie Sunday, which features a GameWorks gift card giveaway for the first 1,000 kids and post-game autographs for everyone. He is Hub Arkish. I am Anthony Herron. We'll come back and get into maybe a little deeper basketball discussion, but also some baseball on the way here. So actually, let's go baseball next because we will have our guy Bruce Levine on the line next. I'm looking to Sean Anderson to make sure my memory isn't failing me on a Sunday morning. But yes, Bruce Levine is up next, and we will transition to baseball here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
The main reasoning behind it is that let's get rid of him now because he doesn't want to be here in 2 years. He turned down this monster extension well north of $200 million, and I'm like, well, where was that? I never saw that. I mean, it's just these rumors and sources and people just saying things, and it's like the only thing that matters is what comes from my mouth, and never once have I said I never wanted to play here.
I like Chesty Chris Bryant. He's had the hair on his face for a while and a bunch of weird hairdos. I can only imagine he's got some hair on his chest at this point, it seems, about what he's heard from the media, what he's heard about himself, about his intentions or lack thereof with the Chicago Cubs. But I like the tenor of what I heard from him the other day. And I'll say, you know, probably overall unsurprising, I think, because, you know, he's a guy who doesn't mind talking to the media. And he's usually about as forthright as I think a professional athlete can be in a lot of circumstances. But you got Hub Arkish and Anthony Herron here on 670 The Score. So as we get into some baseball discussion on a Sunday morning, who better to have on the line with us than Bruce Levine himself? You hear him all over The Score and everywhere else around town, covering the baseball world at large for WSCR 670 The Score. On Twitter, at MLB Bruce Levine. Bruce, how you doing this morning?
Good morning, guys. Yeah, it's another beautiful day here in the desert. I'm hoping that some of that resonates and travels a little bit east towards Chicago as we get closer to the beginning of games here in spring training next Saturday.
Cactus League at its finest. You can kind of hear, I assume there's some tumbleweed rolling by in the desert. You can kind of hear the breeze behind you there. It's sounds great. It's looked great from what I've seen on camera, and I was really struck
there. We don't want to rub it in. No,
no, not too deep.
Not with the weather at home. No, but yeah. It was an interesting day nonetheless. As you came out with that soundbite with Chris Bryant, because he was as forthright and as honest as the day is long, just like he's always been here and cooperative. And you know, this is the type of guy you want to build your franchise around, and the Cubs have done that, and they won a championship with it. As to whether they can retain it or not, and where does the truth lie between whether they've offered him money or not, whether or not they think they can afford to keep him or not with 2 years remaining left on contract control. That is all going to continue to play out here in 2020.
No, Bruce, it's interesting, and I have to confess, I did not hear the entire press conference, but have heard a number of Chris's comments, and I don't blame him for, you know, being upset for anyone to suggest that he might want out of Chicago. But I'm not sure I really heard him give any answer directly related to what I think is the big question, is assuming that you have been bandied about and offered as trade bait, how do you feel about that? What was he asked that? And if he was, what kind of response did he give?
Well, he said that he had no contact with the Cubs over the winter. There was no informational situation going on between the Cubs and his camp, Scott Boras, the agent. So he was in the blind, and he talked about the fact that he's not on social media, he's not on Twitter, he's not on Instagram. The white noise comes from people, just his friends, just sending him things from time to time, but he refuses to listen to the white noise. So there was really there's no continuity for him knowing whether or not he was going to be traded or not. Obviously, he was a little bit unnerved by all this speculation, but from the perspective of understanding that baseball is a business, Chris Bryant is the he's the guy that has been around for a long time now, 5 years with the Cubs, and he's also, you know, the union steward for the Chicago Cubs Players Association. So from that perspective, he knows the business of baseball, and being traded is a part of that. But as far as turning down contracts for $200 million or more, he was totally shocked by hearing that, because in his own mind, he knows that's never happened.
Bruce, with Chris Bryant and what last season was, and I was saying to Hub before we came back here, I thought going into last year and the tenor that I kind of heard from Chris Bryant and making cracks about St. Louis and whatever else, I'm like, man, all right, this guy sounds like a player who's confident, a player who's ready to head into his prime. And he was really good last year, but I don't know that he was, you know, 35 mil a year and above good. So without, you know, any real specific details, understandably, from Bryant yesterday, but whatever enhanced perspective may have been gained from the way he sounded yesterday, do you get the sense that having 2 years left on his deal with the Cubs, that we're any more or less likely to see his career continue moving forward in Chicago beyond the trade deadline this season?
No one has a feel for that, really, honestly. I don't even think the Cubs front office really does, because of the fact that they want to win this year. They still have a magic group of outstanding young players. They still have a very good pitching staff. They have a closer that should be, you know, if he gets his feet under him, one of the very best in the game again. There's a lot of reasons to be optimistic about the Chicago Cubs and what they have. So what the Cubs are trying to do is a little difficult, because the fact is, and Hub and I have talked about this on the air, Anthony, a couple of times, the minor league system isn't producing enough for them to be able to move on from some of their star players right now, who are rounding third and headed for home in their contract status. So from that perspective, you know, it's an uneasy time for Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer, because they want to win now, but they know they only have 2 years left of contract control over some of the top players in the game. They have not been able to come to terms with those players. So if you're going to get optimum amount back, you must give another team two playoff runs with these players to get top flight young talent back in your organization. And that means either trading him now or trading him by the deadline. You see what happens if you get into a Mookie Betts situation. You get a decent player back with 1 year left remaining on a contract, which Betts has going into free agency in November, and that's it. So you can't afford to be in that mode. You must either lock these guys up or move on from them by the July trading deadline if you're not in competition to win.
You know, Bruce, I had an interesting thought driving down. I was listening to Kevin on the way in. Kevin Zipak was on before Anthony and I, and he was talking about possibly reasons to be optimistic for the Cubs, why they could contend. And I think people forget that they still do have more talent than most teams in Major League Baseball. But the question that occurred to me is, what happens if they do come out of the gate strong? What happens if we get to mid-July and they are, you know, 15, 18 games over 500 and looking like they're a real threat and they want to be buyers? I mean, what do they do then, because there's nothing to really offer? I mean, one of the things that I guess is the scariest about this in terms of having any hopes that they can be a contender this year is that they got to go with what they've got for 7 months. It's not like they're going to be able to add any pieces along the way, unless I'm missing something there.
Well, I think, yeah, you might be a little bit, because if you're winning and you're playing well, that means that the guys like Almora and Happ and some of these other younger players that haven't quite made it yet have improved to the point that they're helping you win. And if you want to improve yourself at the trading deadline, some players like that would be used in a possible trade for somebody else's guy. So you have that ability to do that. You also have the ability to go to Mr. Ricketts and say, you want to win another World Series, you know, we have to add payroll to the mix for the rest of this year. So there are, you know, mechanisms that can get you more players and be able to win another year or two. And I don't think that's beyond, you know, the realm of possibility that this team, with good health to these important players, ends up being a very good team. I mean, they have all those components. They have the ability of having a very good starting rotation. They have bullpen question marks, certainly after Kimbrel. But, you know, if they get a break in some of these young pitchers, and they've signed probably 10 pitchers with a minimal amount of major league experience with big arms trying to fortify the bullpen, those guys make it, and, you know, things work out for them.
I think we may, it may be Bruce's cell that we're having a little bit of an issue with there, so we will try and get him back. And you know, Anthony, that was kind of the answer I came up with, I suppose. But you're probably contending because some of those guys are playing well. So right. You're still kind of in that catch 22. And the other thing I'm hoping we can get Bruce back. The other thing I want to ask him is, okay, let's give the Cubs the benefit of the doubt. They've done nothing this offseason. They've actually shed some talent. I mean, not Nick Castellanos. You know, people talk about, well, they were, you know, an 84-win team. They were in the hunt until September. That was in large part because of Nick Castellanos, right. And he's gone, okay? So we've got Bruce back now. And Bruce, where the other question that occurred to me, and we've got texters asking about it too, is, okay, you know, they've done what they've done. They're going to try and go with what they've got. But another guy who's missing, and I know he was missing most of last year, I know he's out of contract now, but based on where you're at, I got to believe that Ben Zobrist wouldn't be that expensive. Why not one more year for him at a reasonable deal?
You there, Bruce?
I'm here.
Yeah, Hub's question was, why not another year with the finances that wouldn't be too oppressive from a guy like Ben Zobrist?
Why is he not playing this year?
Well, why?
What are you saying?
I just read an article where he said he just hasn't heard from anybody, but didn't rule out playing. And he hasn't announced his retirement. I'm wondering,
right,
why not bring him back on a reasonable 1 year deal? You know, assuming that at the end of the year last year, he didn't look that different to me than the Ben Zobrist we'd seen the last couple of years. And it seems like he could be a really valuable piece who fits and would be economical.
Yeah, I think you have to move on from a 39-year-old player at some point, Hub, honestly. You know, and he still has situations with his, you know, family that he wants to take care of. I mean, it was an ugly personal situation that he had to deal with. And I think the Cubs feel that, you know, moving on, you know, it wasn't like Ben was out there pursuing a job. I've talked to his agent a few times, and there were, you know, some pauses in his thought process. So if he found a perfect situation where he could probably still, you know, attend to his children, you know, I just don't think it's workable at this point in time. Obviously, you're right, Hub. He still has a tremendous amount of flexibility and the ability to move position to position and give you professional bats. So you're right about that. But at age 39, I think the Cubs have to lock into a better player.
they're rolling the dice on Jason Kipnis now, excellent player from the North Suburbs that was an all-star a couple times for the Indians and certainly had an impact there. Coming back from injury-plagued season a couple years ago, last year he had an okay year. So they're trying to fill the second base role in a different way.
Bruce, if we certainly won't know anything in great detail until the regular season starts, but are there things to glean from this Rossi's, I guess, management style and what that may be as we kind of get through Cactus League play here?
Yeah, I think he's going to be a more hands-on guy than Joe was. Even though Ross has said here that he wants his coaches to coach, he's going to be on top of all those situations. He talked about yesterday that he's not afraid to go and hit the ground balls to somebody or put a ball on a tee for somebody if it's needed. So he's going to be more on the field, involved physically and mentally at the job right now than Joe was on the physical part. Certainly Joe was always on top of the mental approach and knew everything that was going on. But Rossi's going to be in more in the trenches with his guys right now. He wants to feel that closeness with them and vice versa as he starts his first season. And he has just worked incessantly since he got the job to understand the metrics department, understand what other people do in the organization, scouting, player development. So he's been putting 12-hour days in ever since he got the job, and hopefully it's going to pay off for him and the Cubs starting the season.
Hey, Bruce, real quick, because I know we got to run. You mentioned Jason Kipnis, and I was fascinated by that signing. My nephew actually grew up playing ball with him all through high school. And yes, good player in Cleveland, has struggled the last couple of years. But is that an insurance policy for Nico Hoerner, or where does that leave Nico Hoerner if, in fact, Kipnis is still ready to play at that level?
Well, if Kipnis is ready, and certainly they have other people that can play over there, Bodie certainly can play there. Descalzo, one more year left, although having an injury-plagued and awful season on the field last year, they're not counting for much out of him. If Kipnis wins the job outright here in spring training, shows he's healthy, then Hoerner can go back to Triple-A, play second base for a couple of months, and be ready to come up and help fortify the team in the middle infield the rest of the year. He's only has 375 professional at-bats, so the consensus is that it wouldn't be a horrible thing if he went and played second base every day at AAA for a couple months just to get a few more minor league at-bats out of his way. So I don't think they'd be afraid to start him there, Hub, out of spring training. But ideally, a guy like Kipnis might give them some time and he might find some lightning in the bottle and resuscitate his career. He's a very confident guy. When at his best, he's a very potent bat that can give you an awful lot of experience out there at that position. So if everything works out, I think Hoerner goes back to AAA to start the season.
Bruce, I thought there was a chance you had gotten attacked by Somali pirates for a moment there during the interview, but I'm glad you survived whatever that was.
And we all survived. Hey, guys, have a great day.
Okay? Thanks a lot, Bruce. That's Bruce Levine, our guy here, talking baseball on 670. The Score. We'll keep some baseball discussion rolling because there were some interesting things that Chris Bryant was saying at the podium the other day. I'd love for us to be able to banter about a bit, Hub.
Yeah, there was a moment there. Whatever language Bruce's friends were speaking,
yeah,
it wasn't English.
I don't know what was going on in the background there. I just know there was no Bruce and there was somebody else kind of chattering near his phone. I started to get worried, but fortunately we got
all
Bruce
good
back.
As long as we left him well.
Exactly. Let's take a time out. Come back. We'll be here with you on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Okay. Picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.